And super. We are rolling. Super. Super.
Super.
I'm super. Thanks for rescuing.
Okay, who's starting? Who's
I'm starting. First? I'm starting.
Super who's talking first?
Hello, everyone. This is Trey Stokes, the director and writer of Return of Pink 5, and this is one of our many commentary tracks. In this one, we're talking to two fellows who were instrumental in getting the movie made, and their names are Serge Delpierre and Duncan Fraser. And it's correct, right? Fraser.
Fraser, right? Yes, with an S.
And Serge Delpierre. I have both those names right.
Yes, you actually pronounced my name right. Thank you very, very much.
Well, leave your resumes at the desk on the way out, and I'm sure we'll be calling you. So these two fellas, they actually did a whole bunch of things on the movie, but what we're going to talk about in this commentary is the production side of things, and that's everything that you see that isn't on the screen that's just as important as what does happen on the screen. So you guys want to talk a little bit about just what your general job descriptions were on the Return of Pink 5?
Well, thank you, Trey.
You're welcome,
for inviting me to play with you in your sandbox.
Me too.
I'd worked on Pink 5 Strikes Back with you because I'd spoken with you and said, hey, I like Pink 5. I'd like to help you out if you do another one. And sure enough, you called me up. And I'm going to tell this story.
Go ahead.
Yeah, tell the credit.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, go.
And so basically what I said to Trey, I'd love to help you, but I need to be credited as first assistant nerf herder. So he said, fine.
He is indeed in the credits of Return of Pink 5 Strikes Back as first assistant nerf herder, as requested.
And so it comes time. So Chris Reed says, hey, we'd like you to be line producer on Return of Pink 5.
Chris Reed, of course, was the original overall producer of both Pink 5 Strikes Back and started with us on Return of Pink 5. And then due to other commitments, couldn't stay with us day to day. And that's when you guys kind of came in and took over a lot of the stuff that Chris was doing.
Yes.
Serge being first, where Serge was the one that, you know, Chris actually laid his hand upon your shoulder and said, son, I need you to take over for me now.
To which I said, thanks.
Thanks. Thanks a whole heck
thanks,
of a lot.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks a whole heck of a lot. What is this script? I'm looking at it going like, huh? What?
Chris was instrumental in getting the show started, and when we were starting shooting, he was the man on the set. But then, partly because the show ended up taking, let's face it, longer than we thought, he had to move on to do some other things, and that's when you came in and took over.
And then we were lucky and fortunate enough to get young little fella by the name of Duncan Fraser.
I'm the young one in the group.
The young
yes.
Italian.
Yes.
He came in as a PA.
Yeah.
First.
I came in for the Emperor's Throne Room stuff. I came in because a friend of mine was a boom operator for like 2 days, and he's like, dude, you got to get in. But I had met these guys like at a convention.
Yeah. Well, short version, Duncan just came up to us after a screening that we did at a convention and said, hey, if you ever do a movie, I'd love to be part of it. And then when you showed up on set, it was from a totally different route. Mm-hmm. But it was like, oh, it's hey, referral. Yeah, so, yeah, we meant to call you. Good, glad you're here.
So I started as PA, quickly mastered the craft service area. That became one of my primary responsibilities.
Which is vitally important.
Food and
set,
snacks and lunch and all things related to victuals.
Very important.
victuals. That's a good word. Wow. Using a sentence this week.
Yikes.
And displayed my coffee skills.
Mad coffee skills.
Mad coffee skills. Then eventually I became Serge's little helper. Yes, in the palm of your hand.
No, my right. I'm pointing to my right hand.
Oh, I'm. Thank you. I became Serge's right hand,
guys,
which made me
the
basically second. Second assistant director, which makes me second assistant nerf herder.
Yeah, and let me explain quickly. Second AD or second assistant, what Duncan would make sure is that all talent was ready in costume and if there was any makeup or hair, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Paperwork,
Duncan
phone
was
calls.
Great.
Thanks, Serge.
Great. You were awesome,
it was
man.
Fun working with you guys.
Well, you were both great, and that's why I wanted you to have a commentary of your very own. Because,
thanks, Trey.
Thanks, because it's an unsung job, and it, you know, Amy and I, and we had to go, yes, that's our movie, but none of it could have been possible without what you guys were pulling off behind the scenes.
Oh,
which was,
you're a sweet man, Trey.
Well, you know, thank I appreciate you. It because, you know, I didn't pay you or anything. So this is
what? Let's have that conversation offline.
Yeah, yes, how about that?
I think we probably should.
Right.
So if you guys, unless you have any objection, we will begin to comment now on Volume 1. What do you think?
I move we start commentary on Volume 1.
Very good, then.
That is, I concur.
All right. Okay, well, with my producers on board, then I as director, am now empowered to do so. Wait. So this is where I briefly will expound. Wow, they found that really funny.
We always found that funny, Trey.
Okay.
You can't do anything without us letting
I know.
You do that.
And tragically,
I think we've trained you very well.
Yes. High five for training.
Yes. All right.
So this is where I will briefly expound on how we do our little silly commentary thing. What you need to do is open up the Atom Films page of Return of Pink 5 Volume 1. or some other bootleg copy. If you have one, you know who you are. And you will see the opening logo a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away appear on the screen in blue lettering that will fade away. That's when you restart this commentary and when you see the Pink 5 logo appear on the screen, and then you'll be in sync with us.
This is it's not on the second Roar of the Lion?
No, that's Dark Side of the Moon and Wizard of Oz you're thinking of.
Oh,
no,
we're doing this. Okay.
We're doing this first. Okay. We'll do Dark Side of the Moon a little bit later, if you know what I'm saying.
Awesome. Okay.
All right, so here's where I'm going to tell you to pause the commentary, and then you'll queue up your Pink 5 copy, and then when you see that yellow Pink 5 logo pop on the screen, you will press play on this commentary again, and then you'll be hearing us talk about it. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1, pause. And with the lovely Pink 5 logo, now we're in sync. So we start Volume 1 in Jabba's Palace, and you guys were, I forget because I was just directing, I didn't really know who was in the back room making things happen. When did you guys actually get on board with the production? You weren't with us from day one.
No, I came in actually partway through the Jabba's Palace scene, actually when something was reshot with Han in Carbonite. Yeah, that was my first day. Yeah.
The Han and Carbonite scene, I believe, was, in fact, the first, I'm probably sure, probably was the very first shot we ever did. And, of course, we went back a couple days later and reshot it because we didn't get it right the first time.
Right. I wasn't here for this. This is the first sequence that I wasn't here for.
I remember because Chris Reed was definitely the man on deck for this scene. This was like a weekday night with a shoestring crew and just as few people as we could do. We just grabbed this sequence just because we needed to shoot something. So we were grabbing this on a weekday night, which is under real duress. And it was while we were shooting the sequence that we found out that we just won the national grand prize in the 48-Hour Film Festival.
Great.
Pretty much everyone on the set had done that film, so I got to tell everyone at the same time. Now when we get into this section, which is a different section shot on a totally different day, now you guys, I know, we're around.
That was the first sequence. Yeah, so here I come in, and it's all green and everything, and there's Han and Carbonite, and a little table, and a tray of fruit, and Amy in the slave girl outfit.
And you said, this is the movie I want to work on.
Oh, absolutely. So
regrettably, I was not here for this scene. All that was green except for her and the fruit and the Carbonite.
No, this is all
well, the little table. This table behind her shows up in that green.
And the archway is real, also. So the curtain, all that
same
well,
archway.
Well, in this
before.
Angle, it is on the side angle. But in that front shot, there's nothing real except for Han, and Han is of course a real. We had a real Han and Carbonite.
Right? Oh, right, like that.
The wide shot facing Han is all digital except for her and the table.
Yep.
So these are fairly simple shots. This is like a girl talks to a puppet and the guy's in the background. These look about as simple a shot as there is in the entire movie is this sequence. And yet, what are you doing behind the scenes to make this kind of shot happen? What do you have to do to get this scene to be shot?
Well, there's everything from getting all the actors in the morning and crew and getting the lights set up and getting the actors prepared in costume and makeup, making sure everyone's ready to go. And on the other side, making sure there's, we get to the facility, lights are turned on, heat's turned on because that was important. And then making sure it just all keeps on running and moving. And as a first AD, what I did is I assisted you, Trey.
Thank you.
And basically called roll camera and made sure that everything moved along and everything was coordinated so it could all flow well.
And all that becomes much, much harder when really very few of these people are being paid to do any of these things.
Funny how money can change people's work ethic.
That's where motivation of people who are purely there out of the goodness of their hearts and being volunteers is very, very important. It's a very fine line.
This scene, I remember talking to you, Trey. We were going to try and shoot it outside or something.
The actual desert exterior, where we're going to try and do is the desert exterior.
Right. And I said, we were going to. And I said, Trey, let's try and shoot this green screen, which we did. This is all green screen, and Trey and his team have done an amazing job. Look at that.
Yeah.
Now we get to this next sequence.
Yes, now when we get to the X-Wing in the desert sequence, this is where, Serge, I know you certainly become much more involved by this point. You were definitely, you were ADing at the very least at this point. This scene, of course, is largely practical, except for the background. It's a studio set, but we built this whole darn thing, including all the sand on the floor, which turned out to be a bit of a more of a debacle than we thought it was going to be going
on. Yes, the sand. The sand, basically, we needed sand on the ground to look like it was the desert. And we started off with probably like 5 or 6 bags, and we realized on the amount of space, we just had to keep on getting more.
We thought, what do we need? Like 100 pounds? That ought to do it.
No, yeah. Basically, we wound up getting laying down 2 tons of sand underneath this X-Wing set.
I just remember you coming up to me all the time going, okay, we got to send somebody to the hardware store for more sand.
It was raining that day.
And it was raining. It was pouring down rain.
It was pouring.
So we had people bringing in bags of sand and dumping it on the ground, and then people going at it with hair dryers to try and dry it, because it was just clumped up sand. It was not desert sand. It was wet.
Well, that was the first batch. That was the first batch that was laid down. Then we got a whole bunch of this finer white sand, which we laid on top of it. And it was bad. I mean, we probably did like 3 trips, but I think we got it after about 3 hours. And we had it down, and it looks awesome. And actually, you see some of the lower shots, you see how it blends very well into the back. But that was one production/art concern that we had to take care of. And it actually was cool. And notice the spinning turbine there.
Mm-hmm. The fabulous art department.
That's all very nice.
That's my favorite part, right?
Yes,
there.
Art department, and also people behind the X-Wing. I believe that was Lana and Greg, and I believe one other person.
Marika was back there for a while.
Oh, Marika too.
Marika was in there.
There we go. No, yeah, there it goes.
And I believe Jim was in there.
Spin the turbine?
We auditioned many turbine spinners until we found just the right casting for the role.
Nice. Actually, going back to this shot that you just had looking past that, when you were shooting this shot, I'm like, what is Trey doing? And now I see this, and like, I understand totally. I'm like,
The through the ladder shot?
The through the ladder shot. I'm like, huh?
It's actually, and I will throw the credit to Laura Beth, our DP, who conceived this shot. And I wasn't sure about it either, but I said, okay, fine. And it's okay. It's weird. It's a ridiculous shot, but it works. It seems to work just fine.
Oh, no. I thought when I saw it, you know, it hooks in very well. It places you very well geographically in the scene.
Now we're heading toward the Death Star, where we have actually some all-digital space shots and stuff like that. And then we have a brief interlude with the boys in the control room.
Which was done on a Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon.
We grabbed this one very, very quickly on the fly. Just had a piece of the green wall and a little blinky box.
Can I tell the big secret about this scene?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, we only had one costume. So we basically shot each one of these actors and then put the costume on the other person, shot them, and moved along. It was not shot at the same time.
I was on board at that time, but I wasn't there for that.
Yeah, that was an interesting afternoon.
It's fine, it's my friend.
And then here we have the, this is when she comes into
the hangar sequence.
The hangar sequence. So we actually shot this before the desert sequence because we had to lay down the 2 tons of sand. So this has been shot first.
And the X-Wing, this is just one of those production realities. The X-Wing has not moved an inch between those two scenes.
Right.
It's in exactly the same spot because it was too big to move. We just built the desert around it.
And we also had all the flooring that we had to. If you can see, there's tiles right there of flooring, which we had to move around. We only had certain pieces. And then the rest of it was painted in digitally. So here we had our famous Stormtrooper stunt.
Mm-hmm.
And here we go. And boom. Very nice.
Chris Drake, by the way, is another stunt performer who did took some serious bumps for us, wearing his own armor, by the way. He volunteered his own armor, which is, if you have actual Stormtrooper armor, this is the kind of thing we had to ask people to do a lot is, okay, first of all, we had to beg and borrow and steal people's equipment and armor and props and that they, you know, paid money for, or worked very hard on, and then tell them what we were going to do with it, which was scary as hell.
Now, here's the Emperor throne room scene, and this is a scene where we were shooting weekends, and we weren't sure. We had stopped it at some point, and we're like, what are we going to do? And I talked to Trey, said, Trey, we have to do this scene. We're like, okay.
Yeah, we'd run out of stuff next to shoot, and we needed to get some footage going.
And I said, well, we can do the throne room scene. He said, I don't know. I said, Trey, we can do it. And
we
talked it through.
But we need Darth Vader.
But we need a Darth Vader. So I said, fine, we're going to do it next weekend. He said, sure. Sure enough, by the next Saturday, and we were shooting, and we were just like marveling at the fact we had pulled this whole scene together, which involved finding a Vader, which we found, and we actually lost at the last minute, and then got another one, and then wound up getting the first Vaders, who wound up actually having 2 Vaders, which actually worked out fine.
Yeah, and not to mention the fact that we had our original Vader that we used in Strikes Back, who was not available, and is neither of the Vaders that showed up for. So there's not that many good Vader costumes walking the planet, and we've used 3 of them in the course of making the Pink 5 movie.
Right, and actually the interesting thing about this scene is, if you'll notice, the Emperor seems to be about 15-20 feet up in the air. Actually, He's not. He's up on a little platform. We shot them separately, and this is actually composited together. Mm-hmm. So we simply shot this shot very high, and then we shot really low on the Emperor right there. And once we'd solved that problem, we were like, okay. And plus, there's a lightsaber fight.
And there's a little bit of actual stunts going on with a guy in someone's borrowed expensive Vader suit. So.
That's right. Now, this was choreographed by Chris Hannell and executed. Actually, that's Chris Hannell in the Darth Vader suit right there, doing an awesome job as Darth.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fight scene was choreographed, but then when we were looking at it on the day, we were like, it's a little slim. And so Eddie Doty, our fight coordinator, our stunt coordinator, and I went out to the parking lot. We added about 8 moves in the middle and helped to...
This is the kind of thing that directors do to producers is go, I need a longer fight.
And I'm like, okay, I'll do it. I want to do something fun. So we went out there and we did that. And because we were fixing stuff inside and getting the Vader suit ready and rehearsing the stunt choreography. So that all worked out very well. Mm-hmm. And so once again, we're looking here. And the thing that amazes me, Trey, I really have to congratulate the whole team. That throne room looks awesome because that's all green screen.
Yeah.
That's the floor.
Nothing real but
except
the floor.
Except for the floor. And the actors, of course.
when we get Laura Beth in to talk about cinematography, I want to ask her about shooting an all-black room with 3 characters who are all wearing black.
Yeah.
Thank you, director, for setting that scene up. The cinematographers love scenes like that.
Speaking of cinematography and moving cameras, my first thing I did on set ever was to hold Darth Vader's cape out of the way so that as we rolled the camera on tracks, the cord from the camera didn't hook onto Darth Vader's cape. I was holding his cape. That was my first.
I also want to thank. I want to thank really quickly before this runs out. The Emperor's makeup was done by a gentleman by the name of Scott Connor.
Yes.
Who came in and basically for very little everyone does an awesome job. But if you look at all this, I mean, it's incredible. Look at the Emperor.
And here again, this is where being the AD and the producer is so much of a diplomatic job, because you have to convince people like Steve, you know, Steve Stanton, who's a friend of mine, but a working actor, and Scott Connor, who's a professional makeup artist. You have to go, okay, we're shooting on Saturday, and can you come in about 6 and start on the Emperor's makeup?
But let me tell you, when I talked to Scott, I said, you know, you can do the Emperor's makeup. And he's like, I could hear him over the phone. He lit up. I'm like, I get to do the Emperor's makeup? Okay, I can do this. Who gets to do the Emperor's makeup? He was saying this. And when am I
going
to get a chance like this?
We were very fortunate that there was a lot of people who were very eager to work on the production, so that really gave us a lot of mileage, of course.
For Star Wars fans, it's a huge deal to be able to work on something that is the next best thing to working on the actual films.
Yeah. And actually, the Darth Vader suits came from, one was from Dave Brewster, the other one was from...
Brandon Ewers.
So you'll see right there, right there in the credits. And there's my producer.
Hey, there you guys are. Hey,
there I am.
There's everybody.
Hey, everyone.
I'm on the full credits online at www.pinkfive.com.
Duncan came in later.
Volume 1, Duncan was not that involved, so Duncan becomes a more credits online. So that's the commentary on volume 1. Now, Duncan, you had some, there was a coffee story you wanted to tell?
See, I came on, and one of the first things that I was responsible for was the craft service, the food.
Which I can't stress the importance of that.
And coffee.
I happen to be a coffee snob. I like to grind beans, etc. And I didn't have my accoutrement there, but my philosophy is to always have coffee going. And I used to work on Star Trek Enterprise, so I learned from the best, Chacho, the legendary craft service guy there. So I made coffee at something like 9 o'clock at night. And Trey is a very big coffee person, I found out. Mm-hmm. And I made coffee, and I have my little special ways of doing it so that it's good. And I didn't know these guys really very well. I was still kind of nervous, you know, the creator, director of these things, you know, his third film that he's doing in Lucasfilm. And I didn't know. I come from the studio. Crap, you never know. So I make the coffee. Trey comes over. He pours some in his cup. He drinks it a little bit, looks around and says, "Whoever made this coffee, I will you right now." I was like, do I admit it? I don't even know this guy. I don't know what his deal is.
He might do it.
I kind of sheepishly raised my hand. Me, I'll take a rain check. So that was one of my first memorable stories.
That was some
on
good
the set
coffee.
Of Return of Pink
Welcome
Five.
To the club.
Yeah.
Oh,
what
does
that
dear.
Mean?
Look at it.
I,
you
I
know,
don't know.
You gotta, obviously, you got to look at it from my
look
perspective.
Look it up online.
You know, coming off a whole long day of shooting, and these were some long, long days.
Yeah.
And as a director, you know, of course, you get to go, dig me, I'm a director. But with that comes this huge load of responsibility where people will come to you all the time and ask questions, go, we can't get this costume, so what are you going to do? And how are we going to shoot this? And what are we going to shoot next? And I come after a day like that, you know, some wonderful, marvelous person actually made coffee at 9 p.m. And I was just so darned happy to see that cup of coffee.
That's
so,
what I do.
So that offer is still good and still open. I'm telling you
hey,
right
thanks.
Now.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, I'll go ahead and hang on to the rain check.
That was
now.
Some
I'll let
good
you know.
Coffee.
I'll let you know.
Okay. All right. Well, on that note, on that charming note,
yeah.
That's the that's our volume one commentary. Please stay tuned for the volume two commentary, which will be coming up shortly after volume two airs. We're going to record it right now, but volume two is not out yet. You can't hear it yet because it's not online. But it's going to be great. All kinds of great stuff happens in volume two, and these guys were right up in the middle of it. So that's it for volume one. Good night, Duncan Fraser.
Yes, sir.
And good night, Mr. Trey. Serge Delpierre. Thank
good night,
you very
Mr.
much.
Trey Stokes.
And we'll catch you on the flip-flop.